So I had to just go make sure my guns and ammo was all still intact. Everything's still there. Nobody took anything, so we're in good shape.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Good morning, Ted.
Good morning.
Again with the 6 a.m. recording.
You know, these kids, they have busy lives, and you almost had something.
Before we get into anything, let's just welcome everybody to episode 51.
Cool.
The big 5-1. So, yeah, how was your week? And you said you were busy, huh?
Yeah, we had a busy week. Work was work, but on Friday night, Audrey had multiple events that she had to go to, but luckily that was just with their friends, so we didn't have to deal with that. But we had Toluca Lake holiday night.
Toluca Lake. Isn't that where like Bob Hope's from or something?
Yeah. It's actually just a little town on the outskirts of Burbank.
Now, it's part of LA or it's not part of LA?
I think it's part of LA.
Okay. Like the valley's part of LA, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right. So then you have a beer for this morning, do you?
I have a beer.
Yeah, I'm holding off. I'm having coffee. and the reason I'm having coffee is we have a busy day today with a kid's birthday party, Clarissa's works holiday party, and then some other thing after.
Wow.
I'm just like, whatever. I can't start the day drinking. So I have a French roast that I put through the French press from San Francisco Coffee Roasters.
Nice. So this is one of those local, since we're doing local, this is a Van Nuys brewery, and it's called McLeod Ale Brewing Company. It's called Better Days American Pale Ale. It's a cool style. It's I think there's a lot of brewers in LA, and I think they're doing this thing where they get a regular steel can, and then they put just a sticker on it, like a label. So it's a little less expensive stickering option or branding option than printing on cans.
Wait, what do you mean steel? It's not aluminum?
Well, yeah, aluminum.
Oh,
steel.
Okay.
Sorry. Just like, it just looks like, you know, unfinished metal. All right, let's open it up.
And was it a 16?
It's a 16. Yeah, it's 6 a.m. I'm not doing a 22.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, you know, we're going to be doing all this stuff all day long, man. If I start now, I'm done. I'm done by noon. So what are your tasting notes?
Oh, it's so nice. So it's an American pale ale, very similar to Indian pale ale. Do you know, is there a technical difference?
Yeah, less hops. And probably a lower or smaller grain bill. So probably lower. If I had to guess, it's less than 6% alcohol, I'd say.
Yeah, 5.5. You're right on that.
Where IPAs tend to be like 7-ish.
Ah, oh, I see. And it says it's using a Citra hops. The Citra hops?
Yeah, that's just the type of hop. There's like 60 kinds of hops, you know?
So it's definitely a citrusy hop. It has a very clean, bright taste. It's not your typical unfiltered. It's fully filtered. So I don't know. I like it. It's a nice, refreshing APA, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Cool.
It seems like a lot of, you know, craft brewers and stuff are going to cans. So I don't know what the deal is with cans. Probably cheaper to do. Some claim that they're better for the beer because they're completely in the dark, where even brown bottles do let in some light.
Mm.
Sun can, it'll affect your hops to make them taste skunky. That's why, like, you know, you get those green bottle beers and they taste skunky. That's because of the bottle.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Light hits it and bam.
That's why I don't like Rolling Rock.
Yeah. And you got to be careful because you put your beer down in the sun for like a minute. I mean, it can literally turn it in like less than a minute. So you always the shade when you're outside, when you're outdoors drinking beer.
So drinking on the beach is rough.
No, just make sure you stick your bottle or whatever, you know, your glass in the sand. That's all.
Hmm. Or you could get one of those little cover-ups, the little neoprene cover-ups for your beer bottle.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That perfect.
We solved that issue this morning. Yay.
That's right. Yeah, the problems of the world, and that's what we came up with. It's been raining here. So, you know, we do have one car, but we like to go around by bike and everything. And so it was like, well, what are we going to do? Like, I can't always, if Clarissa takes the boys in the car because it's pouring rain, and then I'm on the bike and rain gear going to work, but I need to pick them up, but yet she needs to get off work early. And it was just this pain, you know? So we got this rain cover for the Urban Arrow.
I saw that.
Yeah. And so we field tested it the other day. First time it came in FedEx, put it on the bike, and we rode in the rain. That's like, it was like that quick. I'll tell you though, the kids loved it. They're like, what is that thing? You know, and they wanted to hop in. So they get in, we do the ride, going downhill 30 some miles an hour. The thing doesn't even flap or nothing. I mean, it's totally solid.
But it doesn't cover you at all, though.
About half.
Oh, really?
So, like, yeah, because as you're cruising, you know, I mean, I had a raincoat, rain pants and stuff, but like from my waist down, I was dry because I'm behind it all.
Okay.
It's like chest up, you're getting the weather, the wind, because, you know, you have to see where you're going. So that part's getting in the weather, but no big deal. I mean, that's why, you know, somebody invented a rain jacket.
No, I saw that. It looked cool. And I was thinking about your story from last week. And I was like, he must have not had that before.
No, that came on, what's today? Today is Saturday. That came on Thursday. Yeah, it came Thursday, put it on the bike, and then it rained all day. So it was perfect timing, you know. But now that I have it, we probably won't get rain for the rest of the year. And then everybody can blame me for taking away the rain.
Well, that was me. The whole week we were dealing with broken umbrellas and like, oh, where is that umbrella? We found some umbrellas that we had lost. And the whole time I was at stores, we had Target, and I'm like, should I buy another umbrella? And I'm like, the minute I buy an umbrella, it's going to stop raining. And I'm not going to spend $25 for an umbrella in Southern California when I have four in various places. But we found some. Two are broken, so I think I'm going to have to pitch those. But yeah, it was amazing. And the kids, even the kids were like, don't buy it, don't buy it. We like the rain.
You're so right. I mean, it never rains or whatever, but when you need it, you can't find it. Like we even misplaced an umbrella, can't find it. I misplaced a pair of gloves last week. I still haven't. I'm claiming aliens, but I'm not really sure. You know, even when I was living in Chicago and things, you know, the first snowfall, you're like, where's the ice scraper? And then you're out there with a credit card, you know, trying to. It's just so dumb, you know. It's like, how come we're never prepared?
I don't know. And you and I are very different. So, like, you probably threw yours out in a big, massive cleanup, and mine's probably buried in junk in the garage.
I'll have to say, though, a minor little segue we will get to about being prepared is the standoff at Sparrow Creek this week. Militia, uh-oh, man, they're ready. They're ready.
They're totally ready. I don't know what they're ready for, but they're totally ready.
I know. I'm going to get into some of that, but how about first we do an iTunes review?
Okay, cool.
You have one? I did it last week.
Okay, you did it last week. All right, so for a review, we have the Be Kind Rewind crew. Los over there has a review for us called Trailers Are Us. And he says, can't stop laughing with these guys about all the nonsense going on with today's trailers. The kids crack me up as well. Subbed immediately. And we'll enjoy the rest of these awesomely entertaining episodes. Thanks, Los.
Awesome. Much appreciated. And if you want to get read and mentioned on the Trailer Junkies podcast, leave us a review. You could even leave it in Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Ted, so what do you say we get into Avengers Endgame?
Oh, cool. Yeah. So what did you think? This is bookends the week. So just to set it up, we had a week where it began on Monday Night Football, where we got the premiere of the second trailer of Captain Marvel.
Right.
Marvel's Captain Marvel. And then the end of the week, it was supposed to happen in the middle of the week. It was supposed to happen Wednesday, but apparently Marvel Studios pushed it to Friday morning. And during Good Morning America, the good synergy partners that Marvel is, in Good Morning America, they released the Avengers Endgame trailer. So from Monday to Friday, both Synergy partners, you know, other parts of the greater Walt Disney Company got to share the benefit of, what is it? It was at 25 million views, I think. And I know Good Morning America doesn't get that, but they get the hit for the first one. So this is the second part of the Avengers Infinity War saga. It's definitely billed. Well, I want to hear your thoughts first on this one.
Okay, my first question. So now Marvel is so big now in the, I don't know, comic book movie space. They have their own studio?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, if you look at the logo, it's actually its 10th anniversary of Marvel Studio.
Well, right, but I mean, in past years, you would have like Paramount would make like a few movies. I mean, you wouldn't say like Friday the 13th Studios because they made so many Friday the 13ths.
Right. It is. So it's like a beyond a franchise. It's its own studio. It was a studio. It was a standalone studio and it was purchased by Disney, but it was kept as a studio. So it's still a shingle. It's still, you know, Figgy producing as the main executive producer of all the Marvel projects. So it is interesting to not talk about your distributor because Disney's still definitely the distributor of it. And that's such a key role in marketing and distribution. I think it speaks to the darkness or the levity that this is supposed to give you as a film. You know, it's a much darker film. And maybe the Disney logo would put too much of a brightness, too much of a brand halo on it. So I think it's one way to say this is Marvel Studios 10, you know, Marvel Studios 10th anniversary, and kind of wipe it off, you know, have it do the effect where it's turning into dust like half of the people in the Marvel universe.
Again, with the studio. Or I should say one more question about the Marvel Studio that kind of elevates it above like what would be a production company.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know the difference, but it just seems that one movie franchise isn't enough to run an entire studio. Because when I think of studio, I think of like the back lot at like Warner Brothers or something, you know, like.
Yeah. But I think Marvel is that big and can be that big, but they had licensed all of their stuff out. And I think when they licensed their stuff out to Fox and to Paramount and to Disney, it definitely bifurcated their ability to produce content. And then when Disney bought them outright and kind of brought them under their overall brand, they needed to, this is a way for them to separate themselves again. And then as Disney and Fox go through their merger, I think there's another brand opportunity for Marvel to further separate itself from Disney, allow them to distribute them in the background, and then, but keep the Marvel brand by itself so that you can see things that are strictly Marvel, which can hopefully be darker and moodier. I think this is interestingly hitting a space where it doesn't want to, you know, hit you with seriousness. I think it stays pretty heavy throughout the whole trailer, and I know we'll get into that, but I think that's part of the brand offering.
Yeah, and that makes sense too, why you would not put Disney. I mean, it's the happiest place on earth. And then like they're having like the earth blow up or something. So how could it be that happy to be,
right,
to be like everything going to hell, right?
Well, I think you're killing all your heroes in this one. And I think you're killing people that you've been with for so many movies through this first phase of Disney Marvel's cinematic universe. So it's a heavy time, and your fans, the true fans, know that it's a heavy time. It opens in this very Shakespearean like shot of, you know, Iron Man and his mask. And he's talking about his death. So I think that was part of the reason that they pushed it off of George H.W. Bush's funeral procession and all of his memorial services all week this week. and the internet went crazy. They wanted it. You know, they heard it was coming out on Wednesday. It didn't come out on Wednesday. We were watching funeral trains, funeral processions, and then on Friday it came out instead.
And I think I saw Thor once. And, you know, the first Thor.
Yeah.
There's what, like, this is like 19 or something?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I haven't seen, like, any of them, the hole is so deep now for me to get caught up, I can more or less say it's never going to happen. Do I need to start from the beginning to even know where this movie, like, how does Iron Man even get into outer space floating around? I mean, do I need to watch all the other ones to figure out, like, how they got there to this point?
I think it's an interesting question. I think the way to get into this right now is, I think you could start with Infinity Wars. I think if you start in Infinity Wars from that just came out on Blu-ray and DVD and digital, and if you start from last year's movie, then you could be ready for this year's movie. But I think the way that Infinity Wars kind of throws you in the middle of something, and some people complained about that, but it would be very difficult. I think you're one of the few people that hasn't seen any of these movies. There's definitely going to be a movie marathon before Endgame comes out. So you can watch, you know, 2 days worth of movies in one sitting. But I think the best way to start with Infinity War and then figure out what you feel like is missing from Infinity War. And then you can pick out a few. Like, I think if you do Civil War, Infinity War, and then one of the Iron Mans, you could probably get it all covered.
Oh, I did see an Iron Man, and I did see a Captain America one. I think the first Captain America.
Okay, the first Avenger.
Is that what that was?
Yes.
Yeah, and then I saw, like, I think the Iron Man were the guy with the whip.
Oh, yeah, Iron Man 2.
Is that what that was? Yeah, so I probably saw that one. Maybe even I might have saw the first one. So I did see a few of them.
So you've seen a few of them. So you'll have enough of a basis, I think, to get into Infinity War. And Infinity War, Endgame is definitely a continuation of Infinity War. So they feel like the two movies you'll have to see together. But I don't think you need to see all of them. I mean, there are characters that you're going to see that you won't know their backstory. And then if you watch those two movies and you think, like, anything's interesting, I mean, I think as far as standalone movies of what has been left or what has come in the past, I think Thor Ragnarok is one of my favorites. And I don't know whether it's just recency bias, but it's definitely up there. And then Black Panther is another one that's really, like, high on my hit list. So that's it. I think Iron Man 3 personally is my favorite because I got to see the premiere of that one. So that one was a lot of fun.
So you have an emotional attachment to it.
Exactly. I took Anne to Captain America, the first Avenger for that premiere. So that's another emotionally attached one. We actually have a dress that Anne wears to some event. She goes, "Oh, I'll wear the Captain America dress." So,
and it's got, like, a big star, and she carries her shield with her.
No, it's so funny because she calls it a Captain America dress, but it's just black and white, and it's kind of like, it's just a fun, stylish fashion, dress. But yeah, I think those are the ones that I'm emotionally attached to, but definitely Black Panther and Civil War and Thor Ragnarok seem to be, like, the standouts.
Yeah.
And then I think this is an interesting place where, you know, Infinity War definitely heightens, and, you know, we talk about one-upping everything. That one definitely did that, and we talked a little bit about how that is sold. But this one feels like, I don't know, as somebody not new to it, but not paying such close attention, maybe you're not so in the weeds, and this can hit you kind of fresh. What is the overall feel you get from Endgame, the trailer?
I think the overall feel is a number of disparate scenes. Tony Stark floating in space, Black Widow and Captain America.
Cap.
You know, they're talking about, like, I don't know how terrible everything is. They show everybody crying. And then in the end, here comes Ant-Man dude, Paul Rudd, trying to get in. and they don't know if he's really there or if he is whatever it is. And then it ends with like a little comedic scene, which none of it seemed to like tie together or something. And then it's like, well, wait, I thought like the world's ending and why is he knocking at the front doors? I don't know. As somebody who's kind of like not attached or not into these types of movies or the series or anything, like it didn't make much sense to me. I think if you're in it and you know the characters and you know the backstory of the past few movies, then it probably makes perfect sense. But for someone like myself, it was lost on me.
Yeah. So as far as those storylines go, I definitely think Infinity War is the thing that sets this trailer up. Infinity War has this, it starts in the middle, it picks up, everybody is separated and they come together a little bit and they're all fighting the same battle at the end, but they are in different places. Spider-Man and Iron Man are off, you know, on this spaceship fighting. And then, you know, in Wakanda, there's a huge fight with a lot of them together. But you're right, there is a lot of separation and the battles are happening. The battle, you know, it's like Asian, what is it? The Pacific Theater and the Atlantic Theater. It was kind of like a world war where they were so far apart that they had to fight all these different battles. So this trailer starts with the assumption that fans of this would know that. So I think that is kind of a... something that is separate from somebody. I don't think you're trying to entice anyone new into this. I think this trailer was put out to put people's anxiety to rest. So if you're anxious about the way Infinity War ended, this is supposed to set you up in this calm place to let you know that we're going to take care of everybody. You know,
to know they're all still okay.
Not even that they're all still okay. We know that they're going to die, but to know that we're going to handle their deaths in a way that is appropriate for the heroes that we built them up to be, you know? So the whole trailer hits me as such a somber piece that I kind of understand why they wouldn't want to release it in the middle of a national mourning, you know? And it does feel kind of like between Captain America and Iron Man, we're pretty sure both of those characters are going to die in this fight, in this film. So I think between those two, to have a president pass away and then have such a huge spotlight on the ceremonies that are surrounding the passing away of a national figure, I think it was the right tone to strike because it is still a movie, and you know, let the trolls, let the fanboys that are complaining about a 2-day wait complain. Why not? And then it was, to me, it was like it hit you so hard, and I felt like it was in the right place, but I was ready for Ant-Man or some kind of levity, but way before it came on the screen, like I was ready for it 3/4 of the way through it or halfway through it. And they stuck it on the end just to give a nod to everybody that we're going to deal with this somber ish, you know, somber for a movie space settings and the deaths of these characters. But we're not going to stray from giving you some levity from time to time.
With everybody dying off, as you're saying, and I don't know what that means and who's dying off or whatever, but the question I have is, now it goes back around, we were talking about Marvel Studios.
Uh-huh.
Are they ending the Avengers franchise, or are they moving in a different direction, or is it just going to be like the X-Men movies, or where's it going?
Well, I don't think they're ending the Avengers. I think the Avengers will
if they kill everybody off, or are there like thousands of them?
There's like a dozen of them. But in the comic world, and you know, I'm not major into the comic book world, but probably a little bit more than you. I know a few things. But there has always been a rotating door on all of these groups. Between X-Men and Avengers, you know, X-Men is very specific. It is a genetic thing. But Avengers, if you're a superhero, you can come into the Avengers and you can go out of the Avengers. So as they leave, there's a bunch of offshoots of different types of Avengers. So there's definitely 100 places they could go. And I think that's the fun and the speculation of this next phase of Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because I think they took something that was a lesser known franchise or a lesser known group within the Marvel Universe and brought it into prominence in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So now they get to do it again.
Yeah, and I was trying to look it up to see how many Marvel characters, and they just keep showing lists. I mean, there's like hundreds of them. There's thousands of them.
There's thousands of them. I thought there's about 4,000.
Oh man. So with that said, they'll never.
So that's why they can be their own studio. You know, when you talk about even Lucas is a studio, and they only have one major franchise. So everything in Lucas is Star Wars. So Star Wars and Lucas are ubiquitous. They, you know, they're interchangeable. But in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you can have the Avengers, you can have X-Men, you can have the Inhumans, you know, there's different groups. There's all kinds of groups within that. So that's what they're thinking about. What's the next group that's going to place it? And I think you could also take the Avengers and kind of start them out or start them in the next phase as closer to the letter of the comic book canon and have them run by Ant-Man and the Wasp and be like a lesser popular group and still have them in the next phase of movies.
Yeah, well, you're right, though. There are thousands. It's unbelievable. So before we continue, I think that's all I had to say about Avengers Endgame. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess if you're into it and you know the story, it looks like it'd be a good movie, but they didn't. One thing I got to say, though, my final positive critique, I think, is it wasn't the type of trailer that just was explosion after explosion after explosion after explosion, and then everybody stands watching the world like destroyed.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, those just annoy me. So with that, it looks like there's like character interaction rather than just everybody like blowing up the world.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how they get Tony out of space. And it's such a beautifully shot little scene in the trailer. So I don't know, you know, I'm on pins and needles waiting for this to come out.
All right. So how about we take a break? I need to go check on a few things and then we'll come back to the standoff at Sparrow Creek.
All right.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at @TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it.
All right, and we're back. All right, so I had to just go make sure my guns and ammo was all still intact. Everything's still there. Nobody took anything, so we're in good shape.
Oh, no. You have it locked up, right?
Yeah, everything's locked up. You know, my submachine guns and everything and, you know, and smoke grenades. It's all there. So I just had to make sure. So the standoff at Sparrow Creek, what are you thinking?
As far as the trailer goes, I just love this trailer. I think it's one of my favorite trailers. Watching Endgame definitely put me in a mood. And it was this somber, somber mood. And so as I was scoping out the different trailers to put in today's episode, the standoff at Sparrow Creek was just another one of those movies that hits you as a stark contrast to what is going on in the trailer universe. It's quiet, you know, it plays sound design up. And throughout, it has this tension, right? The tension is played through the sound design, and I don't even know there's so much off-screen characters talking. It doesn't feel like a trailer, and it's one of those things that it knows trailer craft and it plays against type. So it is called the standoff at Sparrow Creek. You know, you want to see something going on, and yet the standoff at Sparrow Creek, it feels like it's just an interrogation standoff. It's just men asking other men what's going on. It could play as a a stage play. You know what I mean? There's such little action going on. It could be 12 Angry Men, but 12 Angry Men with guns, you know? So.
Oh, that's so funny you said that, because I thought two things. I thought, you know, 12 Angry Men when they're all around and they're setting it up. And then I thought it was like sort of a Reservoir Dogs setup, where you have this band of thieves, essentially, and no one trusts anybody, but they all come together for a common mission or a common cause.
Right. They're trying to save their own skins. And it's an amazing, you know, and I always thought Reservoir Dogs should be done as a play, like a high school play or something.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think, yeah, no, it's definitely, I love that comparison. I think it's amazing. And I think that tension is enough. I think it fully satiated all of my desires of what this film should be about. I think I know everything I need to know about it. I hadn't heard about this movie before the trailer. I saw the trailer. I wanted something from the movie. And then it didn't give me the satisfaction of any kind of real standoff or shootout. You know what I mean? Like, and as a fan of Heat and movies like that, you know, you want to see a shootout, or you want to see an inkling of that. And I don't even know if a shootout happens. And I would want to see this movie just to see, is there a shootout? Is there not a shootout? And if there's not a shootout in the movie, maybe that's okay too. If the thriller aspect, if the human interaction drives the tension of this the way that it drove the trailer, I think that'll be okay if they play it right too.
Yeah, and the sound design I think was awesome, with the ticking clock as they introduce the characters and the standoff between the characters themselves and the implied standoff between the police and them. One thing I thought was interesting though is they're hiding, but all with flashlights. Like, if you want to be hidden, why are you giving away your position with flashlights? I thought they were militia.
Yeah. They're militia. They aren't military.
That's true. Yeah. The other side of that too is, what is the motivation, other than did a guy just get squirrely, or was there true motivation behind this mass shooting that occurred that warranted the standoff? So I wonder if they're going to play out that part of it, because they left that completely open-ended.
Right. Well, I think it's even, what I was saying was, it's still in question what the standoff in the movie title is about. Is it the standoff between the militiamen that we have put in front of us? Or is it a true standoff the way you're expected to think the standoff is, between the police and the militia?
And I think it'll be both.
Yeah. So at the end, you know, when that cop or the security guard is like poking around, it's, you know, you want to see a flash of something. You want to see an interaction or something, but he could literally walk away.
Exactly. I was thinking that too.
We could continue the internal interrogation of each other, you know?
And they solve the problem on their own. And then how does the guy come to justice though?
What an interesting juxtaposition if they could go this route, and they definitely could, because nobody's even looking at this film. So you could do great things within a realm of just tension and theatrics and stay away from the expensiveness of a shootout, which is always a production nightmare, you know? But yeah, I loved it for all of the things that it had and all of the expectations it built up to. And it even, it plays the clicking clock, the ticking clock, and it throws in, I don't know what you would call it in guns and ammo parlance, but the loading of guns and the clicking of, you know, bullets in chambers and things.
Yeah. Like the bolt action sound in a sense.
Yeah, I think that the interplay of the rising of tensions of clocks ticking is a universal kind of tension. And then you add in what sounds like a bolt. It's phenomenal in its sound design. So loved it on many reasons.
Yeah, and clocks, I think, imply like time is of the essence. We have to get this figured out because like the heat's coming down on us. So yeah, it's a sense of tension, like you said.
And it really wasn't.
Well, we don't know that.
It was self-inflicted almost in the beginning. They're like, we have to figure this out before they get us or something. But
and that's true, yeah.
We don't see the other side, so we don't know.
I was in the army. We were having a weekend off, whatever, and we go out to the high desert, and we're doing like some kind of bonfire, like get some beers and barbecue and all this stuff, and we're kind of just out having some fun, you know, like in the, at like, I don't even want to call it like a retreat, but like we were just away from the army for that weekend.
And is that sanctioned by the army?
No, this was just like friends doing stuff out in the woods.
But they let you go off.
Oh yeah, you get liberty, sure. You get pass.
Okay. So this is on liberty.
Yeah, you get passes and stuff.
So you hang out with the people that you work and live with on while you're on liberty.
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, they're like family in to some regard.
They're like your family and friends. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we go out there and we're hanging out, and some people were from like the town because like the guy's brother-in-law met us out there and they brought their fifth wheel camper and whatever it was, you know, it was one of those kind of things. And so I'm talking to the guy and he was telling about how his uncle has some underground bunker, you know, with like a manhole cover to get down into it, you know, and it was all like this chamber where I don't even remember. And I was like, you know, he's telling me about like kind of like a militia type scenario where, you know, they have all these weapons and whatever it was. And I'm like, man, these militia types are just crazy, you know. And the guy looks at me and goes, are they crazy or are they prepared? And I'm like, prepared for what? You know, like, what are they preparing for? You know, like the end of civilization and stuff, he would say. And I'm thinking, like, the end of civilization, like, save your money and invest it and stuff and, like, just have less stuff and less debt and you'll probably be okay. You'll probably be better off, you know? But anyway, so then he's talking all this stuff up and then it gets me thinking, like, you know, you talk to the militia and even in this movie, the guy said, contact the other local militia and let them know that we didn't do anything.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, well, how many militia could be in this area? Are there militia all over the place that we don't even know about? You know? And, like, how do you even get into a militia? Like, what's the recruiting process? But then I'm thinking to myself, like, when we invaded Iraq in 2003, they were, like, the fifth largest army in the world at the time.
Really?
Or military in the world at the time. And, like, we just blew over them like they didn't even exist. And I'm thinking to myself, what's a 50-man militia going to do?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to, the worst, it's going to be like Waco.
Yeah.
You know, but the point is, it's like they're going to defend themselves against like a tyrannical United States or something. And you think to yourself, like, it doesn't matter, man. Once you turn like one platoon of, you know, a infantry unit or something, like, you guys are done.
Yeah.
You know, they're running around the woods playing guns, you know, like little kids.
Is this movie your kind of movie? Is it an interesting topic for you?
Oh, I would certainly watch this. Yeah, this looks really cool.
Have you seen Red State?
Red State.
Red State.
No, it sounds Republican.
It's not at all. Red State is a Kevin Smith movie. You know Kevin Smith?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he did Mallrats and he did Clerks. But then he did this movie, which is kind of like on the fringes of horror and I don't know what you would call it. I think horror and political thriller. But it's about a small religious cult. And the religious cult actually ends up, you know, some kids like try to desecrate this religious cult. So they kidnap the kids and they kind of hold the kids hostage. And it creates this ATF situation.
So it is Republican. I'm just kidding.
No, it's not at all because, you know, John Goodman plays the head ATF guy and it just plays so real.
John Goodman. Wow.
Yeah. And it's a definite movie. You should definitely watch it. I'll send you a link or something. And it's an amazing movie. And it kind of, the standoff at Sparrow Creek reminded me of that. But Red State's much more of an action film that plays into the action and has all of its political commentary and all of its stances kind of worn on its sleeve. And the standoff at Sparrow Creek, I don't feel like I know the political stance of the filmmakers from watching this yet. Hopefully for the movie, it'll expose it a little bit more.
Yeah, and I also had the feel it was kind of like a gritty version of Clue.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
You know, you get the guys together like, you know, it was done with the, you know, M4 carbine in the woods against the crowd by, you know, Mr. Mustard or Colonel Mustard or whatever, you know. And
oh, he's a colonel. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of bizarre, you know, but... no, it looks really cool. I like the inner team conflict. I'm much like a Reservoir Dogs, like we mm-hmm. were talking. I enjoy that kind of stuff because I feel that's like kind of how families function sometimes, you know? Or that's how you right. yourself functions when you're in conflict with a decision you might have to make or whatever. And you see these things play out, and conflicts happen all the time. Maybe not to the extent of like mass shootings, but conflicts play out right. all the time. And I'd like to see, like, how does a militia, maybe they even talk about how this militia got together and who these guys are and some background information and like, I don't know. What do you think? It takes place in like Idaho or Montana or something?
Wow.
That tends to yeah. be where they tends to be where they operate.
Or Oregon or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. It feels like that. I guess they're wearing coats, right? So it's kind of like a colder climb. But yeah. Did you get to go see the bunker, or was it they just told you about it?
Oh no, this was just sitting around a campfire. Like, yeah, no, it was
okay.
He was telling me his uncle had this thing, and I was just like, what was the point of it, you know? And
right,
and his point is, you know, there's people out there, they think like, you know, the world will end one day, there'll be total societal collapse, and they'll be the ones to survive out in the desert with like their rations of food and ammo.
Oh yeah,
you know, the kind of people who they think like the future currency will be bullets. And, you know, in a way, I feel so sorry for people that have those beliefs or those ideas, because it's like, one, you're not really living for the now. You're living for you're living for Mad Max.
Right.
Or like The Walking Dead or something, you know, like, and I think people like in a weird sort of way are rooting for the demise of everything and destruction.
The downfall of society, yeah.
Yeah, they're like almost rooting for it, you know, like, because, I don't know, they want to tell you so, and then that's the world they want to live in, you know, like the postman or something, you know, like post-apocalyptic, you know, I have all my weapons and nobody can get me and stuff, you know, and...
Yeah. I think if we run into those people in the future, I think we should just tell them that they should go to the gym more, because I think at least that gives you some immediate benefit if you tell them like, yeah, keep your guns, but maybe you should run a little bit more, because getting fit is important in the apocalypse as well.
Exactly. And you know, one demographic I hope does not listen to our show is this demographic, because I don't want a hit put on me.
No, definitely not.
Because I don't want a hit put on me because I'm down talking militiamen and the overall just probably arrogance and ignorance of what the society does. I mean, I just think it's so weird, you know, like,
yeah,
I just think that like this demographic of person would be so much more beneficial. Like, I was listening to a podcast when we were driving cross country, and the guy was saying that, mm-hmm. you know, you need to have a 1-ton dually crew cab extended bed with, you know, diesel, with jerry cans of diesel fuel ready to go at any moment. You need to buy yourself like a cabin in the woods with weapons and ammo and all this stuff. And, you know, he was like some retired military guy, you know, who like served in Afghanistan yeah. and all this. And he was talking about how like it's tribal and war torn and everything. And he's like, because once that happens here, if you don't have those things, you're going to just like get killed and fall away with society and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, like all that money that you could put, like hundreds of $1 million you're going to put into like preparing for the end times that probably will never come.
Right.
Or you could just fund your 401k and just live, you know, have money for retirement. I mean, it's like, Like when you, like, which is far more likely to occur.
Yeah, they're planning for the 0.00001 possibility, percent possibility.
Exactly. Instead of preparing for the
99.999. Exactly,
and it's like the one is guaranteed, as long as you continue to live a good, long, healthy life, the retirement factor is guaranteed to happen. The end of society, the collapse of everything, probably not, you know?
Right. I had just one last comment. Because I was saying the trailer craft on this one is very high. I was thinking back to the Gary Winogrand trailer that we watched.
Oh, yeah.
And I love, it had a lot to say in the trailer, and it had those long quotes.
Yeah.
Those long quotes that were on screen. And I was like, oh, I can't read it so fast. And this one had perfectly timed, perfectly length quotes, a genuine out of left field gem was Rolling Stones. And then Riveting was another one. And then a dramatic debut or... it hit everything very succinctly.
Yeah, much agreed with that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, sometimes trailers, their text is so fast, like, especially when they try to keep time with, like, a high-tempo beat. Whew, man, you can't keep up.
Right.
So, speaking of, money and jobs and saving for retirement and all that, let's get to Trapped, the woman who lost her job.
Ooh, good segue.
So I kind of misread the title at first. I thought it was White Trash.
Uh-huh. Trashed. Yeah, and it definitely has that feel, but it I think that label, like you said, that label is a whole it gives you the connotation of what the broader society puts on these people. And I say it separately because white trash is definitely, a term that is used to denigrate a huge swath of American society. And this really, I think this taps into the same vein that maybe Trump tapped into. The idea of, the people that have been ignored by the populace, by the mainstream society, they're still people, And these actors are of such high caliber. Naomi Watts and Matt Dillon, it's kind of amazing to have them step into what looks like should just be an indie movie. It should just be like another indie movie that tackles this small town, small lives kind of story.
Yeah, and I like it too because it's a peek into the lives of a couple of people, and this story plays out probably for somebody. I mean, it's probably somebody's like real life that they're living, but it's just a fictional story that was written. I can only assume that's the case.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, I think, you kind of talked about a lot of stuff in there, and it was kind of all wrapped up. And I think the one thing you hit was the people that are left behind in society. I think Trump was specifically speaking to them, and it's the demographic that he tied into, because you always get conversations about, say, minorities and trying to help, poor. When you think of helping poor, you often think of various people of color, Hispanic, Black, whatever it might be. You think of, immigrants, you think of all these demographics of people that the left discusses and talks about and brings into the fray. And then you talk about like white privilege and how white people have like so much more than minorities, et cetera. Whereas, and I don't like minorities either because I think we're all minorities to some degree.
Yeah.
But you look at that, but the people that often need the same help, like if you look at the number of people on welfare, there's probably more white people on welfare than any other demographic.
Yes, that is true.
But they often get overlooked on so many levels because they're not the ones that, I think the left almost like ignores this demographic a lot. Because it's just, it would come across as you're just supporting more white people and ignoring more people of color. So they kind of do get lost in that mix. And then here comes someone like Trump.
And it doesn't play into the narrative.
It doesn't play into the narrative, right. So here comes somebody like Trump talking specifically to small towns like, you know, let's say where they are, you know, like Virginia or Appalachia and things like that, you know, where a lot of this type of stuff plays out.
Right.
When we drove cross country, we went through 2-lane highway in South Dakota. We saw little towns, all white, little towns, highly impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people living in like boarded up shacks with, you know, no windows because there was plywood on the house and stuff.
And it's cold.
Yeah. You know, so there is a true demographic of poor people that are white, I think, that do get overlooked in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, trapped is probably a number of things, too. I mean, you know, like you're trapped in a dead-end job. You're trapped in a wheelchair. You know, you're trapped in, like, this guy likes you, that guy likes you. Now you're pregnant by the other guy, but how do we know it's not the other one?
Right. I got that, too. I totally got that.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of playing both sides of them, you know, and then all of a sudden marriage comes in, which, you know, I call trap married with children.
I love the idea of trapped because I know we talk about other podcasts sometimes, and I tried to listen to Drilled. I listened to 3 different episodes.
Oh, you didn't get into it?
There's something so defeating and depressing.
Oh, dude, it's horrible.
The topic, and it's just like, it is so overwhelming. It was overwhelmingly depressing to me I tried because I was like, oh, let's talk about it. And I couldn't get into it. But on the lighter note, the Ezra Klein Show this week, he had Will Storr on, and Will Storr is an author who wrote a book called Selfie. And while the book sounds like it's about taking pictures of yourself for the Instagram, it's actually a great exploration of the self and the concept of self in society. And basically, this is the American dream. So the American dream has trapped these people into this space where, you know, the American dream always talks about choice, and it always sounds like, and it feels like you have a choice when you're living in America. But for many people in America, they don't have a choice. And when you don't have a choice, you are titled trapped, you know? So I think that was a great cinematic exploration of this concept in a book of a podcast that I listened to also this week. So it was very interesting to see the layers of the onion peel away and to think that our society, while building up the American dream, which definitely helps society and definitely drives the economic engine of the country, it definitely, on the other side of that, it casts all of these people that can't achieve the American dream into these small pockets where you feel like it's your fault. And to a degree, you have some parts of it are your fault, and then other parts of it are societally, you know, impressed upon you or, you know, put upon you. So I think that idea of when you have the American dream where anybody can achieve anything, our stratification of our societal economic layers has definitely gone to a point where you can't. If you're that cashier in that place, and as a typical blue collar, middle America kind of person, or, you know, what I identify as.
Like salt of the earth people.
Well, yeah, like I'm not making millions, but I'm not, you know, but I'm still kind of, I feel like I'm struggling. But I interact with people that are truly struggling every day, probably, but I don't even know it. So this was an interesting way to peel back the layers of the life of the person across the counter from you, if you go into 7-Eleven or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, when you see people working, you know, the cashier at, you know, Vons, you know, the grocery store, the baristas at, you know, the coffee shop and everything. I mean, they're making, you know, like I used to work retail when I was in college and everything, and, you know, trying to get to a better place and all that. And yeah, I mean, you're lucky to make $10 an hour, $12 an hour, you know, and then you look at people at Amazon, now they make $15 an hour. And then you start reading stories about how now they want fewer hours because that $15 an hour puts them a dollar over, you know, their annual income. And now they don't get benefits, you know, like, you know, they don't get, you know, like housing subsidies or, you know, food stamp type subsidies, which further makes them impoverished because the $15 isn't enough. But yet at, say, $12, they were able to get some subsidies that kind of helped them out a little bit.
And it made them feel it was the equivalent of making $17 an hour or something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's almost like they were losing money now that some people were talking about in this article and stuff. So, you know, there are people that have 40-hour a week jobs. They're steady. Maybe they do have some benefits and stuff, but they just don't make a lot of money. And they do struggle consistently, day in, day out. And they're kind of like, you know, the working poor, they're kind of off the radar, you know, but day in, day out, they just can't afford things. And then if you feel like, or if you look at the term trapped, in the way we've designed like our built environment, for example, like you need a car to get around mostly, you know, and freedom comes when you're 16, you know, but like a 14 year old doesn't have freedom because they're stuck at home half the time because they don't have mobility, you know? And I think that brings into where like this guy's wheelchair is too, because part of feeling free is to be mobile. And I don't think it's necessarily that Americans love their cars so much is that they love freedom and mobility. If we had like a different built environment, you know, I asked my neighbors, you know, like she works, her parents own a store around the corner from her house. Mm-hmm. I asked her, I said, well, why don't you ever like just walk there? But they live in a cul-de-sac, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to walk there, they literally have to go like a mile through the neighborhood just to get to the main street to go like a mile back the other direction.
Ugh.
When the store is literally like right behind their house, but they would have to like jump over a big block wall, you know? And it's like the way things are built makes you feel trapped too, I think, you know? So like, I think there's a lot of information packed into this, but I think most of what we look at as trapped is probably like the relationships more than the built environment. But then again, he's in a wheelchair, so who knows how that plays in.
Right. I feel like it's an amazing performance, you know, performance driven film, you know, it definitely speaks to all the strengths of all these characters. I'm interested to see Norman Reedus, you know, from Walking Dead. He looks completely different. Right.
Well, he cut his hair. That's why
he cut his hair, and the accent is also different.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit different.
Although he doesn't speak that much though in the trailer.
Right. So I'm interested to see how he plays up to, Naomi Watts and, Matt Dillon. Cause it feels like Matt Dillon is probably like the most acclaimed of these actors. And Naomi Watts is a close second, but she's definitely like the lead character. So it's interesting to see how these three characters and three actors play out together.
Yeah. And I think what is cool about the three movie trailers this week is Trapped and The Standoff at Sparrow Creek is going to rely heavily on dialogue, conversation, acting, body language, facial, you know, feet, like facial, like what would you call it? Like
the nuances of acting without speaking.
Yeah. I mean, the nonverbal communication, I guess. Yeah.
There you go. Nonverbal communication.
The off camera type stuff, the off camera voices, the off camera action, gunfire, whatever it might be. But then you look at like the Avengers, and I don't watch a lot of them. The ones I've seen, big blockbuster. Explosions, high production value, lots of money gets poured into it, tons of CGI, like complete 180 from what these other two movies are going to be.
Yeah, but don't you think the trailer for Endgame felt like it was also in this verbal kind of small acting, small spaces kind of stuff? I felt like that's the thing that tied these three trailers for me together was it had, they all had a certain depth and levity to the conversations that were going on that added weight to all the films, you know?
Yeah. And, oh no, I completely agree with that. I think what I was getting at is, like, if you look at it from maybe a historic point of view or what you're expecting in Avengers, you know the battle's impending.
Yeah.
The other two, you're not sure what battle is going to be there, and it might just rely heavily on dialogue and a battle never takes place.
Right. And we know in Trap that there's a number of battles that take place, because we see the beginning of it. We see a physical fight between Matt Dillon and what's his name?
I forget.
Norman Reedus. So that kind of stuff. So Trapped actually plays as the most physical, the most action-packed of these three trailers, which is kind of strange, right? When you think about
domestic violence, man. Cops never know what to expect when they show up to the scene. That's why they're so dangerous, you know?
Horrible thing. Yeah, because you could be... you could be on the guy and the woman attacks you from the back, right?
Well, there's emotions are running high.
Yeah, everybody's yeah. high tension. So, yeah, those are the three. I definitely think there's a thread in there somewhere, but I leave it to the audience to draw it. I will say I have some notes on all the movies. I think Trapped, I'm not a fan of the title.
No.
I think it needs a little more. To me, it's a little too generic, a little too forgettable. I think it's appropriate.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
What it gives you mentally. But if you're searching for something, as I was, it's hard to find. You know, when you do Trap 2019, it doesn't scream something that is, you know, something that is a movie. So I think, to me, Trapped needs a little more window dressing on the title. I don't know what it is, but that's the idea of a note. The note is not to give the answer, but the note is to pose the question, to let the creatives give their creative energy to make it better. So that's the one important thing I've learned about giving notes is don't always try to solve the problem, but definitely give the issue. Maybe if you don't have the answer. And then The Standoff at Sparrow Creek, another title issue with me is it should just be Standoff at Sparrow Creek. Why do we need The Standoff? Maybe I copied that wrong. No, it's The Standoff at Sparrow Creek. It should just be Standoff at Sparrow Creek, don't you think?
I agree. I thought the same thing.
It's more impactful, I think.
For sure.
And then Avengers Endgame, nothing to say about that title. I think it's perfect. So the one thing about Avengers Endgame, although I think the title is perfect, is that a lot of people online are saying Endgame as two words, and it's driving our friends over at Trailer Track crazy because he put out a post saying Endgame, one word. So note to everyone, just a public service announcement, Endgame is one word.
That's awesome. All right, Ted, I have nothing left to say about Trapped, or any of them for that matter. I think, you know, the trailers are all pretty cool this week. I like The Standoff at Sparrow Creek. Like you said, Standoff at Sparrow Creek, though I do agree with that. But haven't watched anything this week because...
You haven't?
No, Clarissa was working wonky hours and, you know, we just had like, you know... Last night we did the parade. There was supposed to be a launch that got scrubbed, Delta IV Heavy. And then we just had a weird week with like hours and events and just all this stuff that was going on. And tonight we're going to like her holiday party at work and all, as I mentioned.
You have a holiday party at work on Saturday?
For Clarissa's work. Yeah. Well, it's like the hospital district. So there's like hundreds of people and they rent like a big hall and...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's always a good time.
Oh, that's true. You know, why am I saying that's weird? I'm going to my office holiday party tonight, too, with Bryce. And it's so funny because Bryce and Audrey, normally we go as a family, all four of us. And Audrey has like her girlfriend's birthday party that she wants to go to instead of holiday party with us. And Anna had to think long and hard whether we're going to let her go to this party or, you know, drag her along with us, but we don't need her sulking at our office party.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, because of that, we didn't watch anything, but did you?
I thought that I did, but I I wanted to, but I did not. Yes, it was a very light week on watching stuff.
You know, life just got in the way this week with a bunch of things, you know, and it just didn't happen. So, which is, you know, and that's fine. I mean, the TV was off.
I think the only thing that I watched was the end of the Kaminsky Method. Yeah. So I watched the last couple of episodes of that, and I was passing a billboard today or yesterday, and I said to Anne, I said, Anne, it's over. There's no more episodes for me to watch. Now I have to wait a year. So it's almost like they give you 10 episodes or 8 episodes and you binge them because they're half an hour, and then you have to wait a year, you know? It's, I don't know.
Yeah, at least when you have, like, you know, 10 episodes over 10 weeks or whatever, 15 episodes over 15 weeks.
Or 24 episodes.
Like, you really, by the time it's over, you're really only waiting like 6 months or whatever. Or if you're a Game of Thrones, like one season to the next, it's like, 2.5 years or something. I mean, like, come on already. All right. Another one's in the can, it looks like.
Yay. Have fun at Chris's party.
All right, Ted. Hey, you have a good day and enjoy tonight.
All right. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.